Saffron Planet. Making sense of it all.
Britain's Got Talent, apparently. No, what was the name of that?
Not
the
that
woman,
apparent on that
TV
show.
The Scottish woman. The Scottish woman. No, I don't know her name. Honestly, I don't know her name.
Suzanne. It's this guy.
I don't know. What was her name?
Susan Boyle.
Oh, Susan Boyle. Why would 100,000, no, 100 million YouTube hits be acquired from this?
It's a horrendous amount.
Yeah, but why? Why?
It's because it's a 2.5 or 3 minute clip, very well edited by the people
it seems
that.
Very well. It looks totally unlikely.
Yeah, it's just one of those like little stories that people.
It's contrast, basically.
Exactly. Yeah, because exactly, she's got the voice of an angel, but the face of a.
The face of that, I don't know. Yes.
It's like
she might listen to this.
It's a typical rags to riches thing, isn't it?
Yeah, but she's not there yet. It's just 1 3-minute performance.
I know.
She may not get through.
Well, there was the freak show, isn't it?
Well, there was the ginger out to it, then they'll get Gok Wan to do a makeover. You know, whatever. Then
she's had a makeover.
Oh, she's a beautiful butterfly.
There was, I realise that she's not that great a singer.
There was, well, there was the ginger kid last year who got beaten up and bullied and stuff, and he didn't. No one's heard of him anymore. Do you know what I mean? It was just sort of like, he was on the ITN news and everything.
Yeah. Really?
Going on Britain's Got Talent.
Oh, right.
And, but, you know, a year later.
Who was he? I didn't.
Exactly.
I can't remember.
Exactly. You can't remember. It was a ginger kid who was like. Yeah. What did
he do?
He just sang really sweetly.
I remember him, yeah.
Well, but none of us remember his name, can we?
Jeff Tambor.
That's not his name.
Yeah, but more. But significantly, why is this phenomenon? Why do we allow ourselves
Ginger
to be manipulated?
Tom.
I mean, it's manipulation, isn't it?
Well, it's not really manipulation.
It's manipulation. It's disgusting.
Do you feel manipulated?
And I, for one, I feel manipulated.
Do you?
My emotions have been played with by the TV company.
Yeah? Right. Yes. So what should they do about it then?
Surely it's just demonstrate.
It's just entertainment for them.
If people want to watch it, that's their own problem, isn't it? Yeah. If someone gives.
It's like the sort of people that go to see the Jeremy Kyle show.
We've done that
on a previous podcast.
That was a low point in my life. I'd like to say I wasn't on
it. But you enjoyed it.
No, I did. It was really horrible because like they encourage you to boo and like proper have a go at the people for no reason, and then you realise they are real people. Feel a bit bad, but no, that was. I only watched it once, so I thought I can't go back there. It's a vile place.
Did you stand up and talk? Like, didn't you go to the front though?
I did. Oh yeah, they had to check the cameras, so they asked people from the audience to go onto the stage and sit in the chairs and argue. So I went on there and had to pretend that I'd had an affair or something. Yeah. It was an obscure moment, standing on a Jeremy Kyle show, pretending that someone was my mother and my sister and all that sort of stuff. Very weird. I think. Like all these TV shows, the problem, if the TV show's making it, okay, that's a bit out of order for them. But if we're watching it, we can't really blame someone. If you don't watch something, then you can have a right to have a go about it. But if you're actually being fooled by it, you can't really blame them, as it is certainly your decision.
But then if you haven't watched it, you don't know actually what you're complaining about.
I could be saving you from watching something worse.
This is true.
It's just the fact that our lives are dictated by what we watch through our eyes on a Saturday night.
Sure.
What could we be doing apart from watching TV?
We could be making money, right?
Yeah.
And it's the TV executives that are thinking to themselves, look, we've got money, we're doing okay, let's see if we can stop as many people as we can from getting this money that we want to make. Yeah. Put out these entertainment shows 7 days a week. Keep people in their houses, keep people entertained, keep people quiet. Mm. It's the opium of the masses, and as long as they're quiet, there's more money for executives.
The masses used to be religion.
Having
isn't
said
it?
That, though, ITV, who are putting this out, are in terrible, dire financial straits at the moment, and it's their only success at the moment.
Is it?
Yeah.
So it's
the only
like
thing they're beating the BBC.
Grace left, isn't he? Well, he's the chairman. No, he's the non-executive chairman.
Michael Gray, yeah.
Actually, there's a funny story about it, because the new head, or was it the BBC? Was Michael Gray the ITV or BBC?
He was at the BBC.
And he went to ITV.
Yeah, they got a new bloke at BBC as another Jewish bloke at the top.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And they had a shindig in an industry, sort of TV industry thing. where they all sort of talk about their plans and, you know, all the creme de la creme of the production industry.
Blue and, sky thinking.
Yeah, yeah. And I had this, the comedian, the Iranian comedian.
Oh, right.
And he gave a joke and it was sort of mildly anti-Semitic. And, and this bloke, this Jewish head, it all kicked off and they had a row.
Live at this event.
And the Iranian went off on a 5-minute diatribe. It wasn't anti-Semitic, but they sort of said it was the longest sort of suicide note, you know, sort of, it was like digging himself in the hole.
As always, somebody said the other day, the TV equivalent of the press, isn't it? Never pick an argument with someone who buys ink by the barrel.
Explain that one.
Yeah, don't they come right out of my mouth.
Well, I've been newspapers
and
things.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, right.
But well, that was a TV equivalent, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think he's very funny, his name is very funny.
He is, actually. Reminds me of Alexei Sale.
Yeah, he's like an Iranian Alexei Sale.
The thing is, he puts it on, doesn't he? And it's not his real voice. His real voice is really posh.
He's really posh. He's really posh London accent. Yeah, he just puts it on to sort of sound a bit...
How do you think it goes down in the Muslim community? Though?
Well, there's also there's the other female... Muslim comedian whose name I've forgotten. Yeah. Who does quite a lot.
She's Iranian as well, isn't she? Yeah,
probably.
I think they all escaped when the Shah lost power. I think their families came out.
Did she come to that thing we went to last year, the media?
No, that was another. She wasn't a comedian. She was
a reporter.
Very serious.
She was a news reporter.
She just had a funny
Twitch.
So I want to say about. There's a sense of some Muslims are sort of integrated into the Western society in the media sense, and don't automatically come under a fatwa like Salman Rushdie did.
I don't know. I mean, a lot of them did come out of the families escaped.
Yeah,
from
what?
I think you said infiltrate. You said infiltrate Western culture. Yeah. It was very different. Assimilation.
They're all fifth colonists.
But I know it all depends what they're saying, because like I know like the stuff that I've seen of Islamic comedians, they're not really sort of, there's no big powerful earth shattering statement. It's like, you know, I think one of the women does a few jokes about the fact that some Asian women have hairy lips. I think that's about as deep as it goes. Do you know what I mean? It's not Salman Rushdie who sort of came out saying.
I find him actually. What's his name? How do you pronounce his name?
Omid Djalali.
I just think he's very funny, actually. Every time I've seen him, he's actually very good at dealing with the stereotype of the extreme Islam. Yeah. Like last week on the show he did about. Talking about, everybody's here, you want to go out afterwards and go out on the pool and get drunk and all that. That's why we want to destroy the West. You know. So he's very good at sort of dealing with that, you know, the extreme views of some of his...
I just wonder how he goes down with the extremists.
Probably not very well.
They probably wouldn't.
I don't think anyone...
He cares what they think. They probably find a lot of things offensive.
Anyway, so last time we talked about how many Christian comedians there are, and I think we didn't have many.
Yeah.
Have there been any more since?
There's a few at that Greenbelt. I looked at the old Greenbelt website, and they've got a few obscure supposed comedians.
I think it's an interesting subject. I think what I've realised lately about comedy, and all of us here love comedy, one form or another, but what I've noticed lately is a lot of the very successful comedians at the moment are almost coming into a position where they're becoming spokesmen for anti-Christian.
Greenish.
Even some of the really funny ones that we would find really funny. Ricky Gervais, Eddie Izzard, Stephen Fry. A lot of these people are very, very... they're almost being put in a position, whereas for over several years we've had... really the whole sexual revolution has gone against a lot of what maybe the church represents stuff. It's almost gone now. It's obviously gone.
There's something strange at the window.
Hello!
Right, carry on.
It seems that...
do you think the main topic in society now is religion or anti-religion?
I think it is a lot, but I also think that two very powerful things that draw the public in. like you have with advertising, advertisers know way ahead. They do all their research on what attracts people and what, you know. For years they've known that sex sells, right? But also humour sells. And I think that's coming into position a bit more now, that the comedy thing, in terms of drawing people, not as far as advertising, but as far as major thinking and major subject matters concerned. And it seems to be coming centre stage and is actually attracting a lot of the public, a lot of their views.
A lot of comedians now becoming spokesmen for certain causes.
Yeah, they're talking
like
more
rock
star, so than
rock stars used to be like Bono and all that, you know.
Right,
now comedians are like
comedians
the new
are,
rock and roll.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you're saying that it's like a lot of comedians now are playing that atheist card and are making a lot of jokes around religion and like organized religion and belief.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking that atheism itself, it's not a movement that the first step is to shout about it. It's almost like a reaction to it's the reaction to the rise in more overt evangelicalism. And because I mean atheism itself isn't like
organized
a movement where people naturally want to convert people. It's more like a reaction to
I would disagree with that.
I think
it is changing now.
A lot of it
now
is.
Now it's like people do want to
that's because
it's, people it's
like
a reaction
are actually militant
but now
atheists.
They are but they it wasn't like that 10 years ago.
No, I think
it's a reaction.
Yeah, well, I think partly a reaction, but partly it seems to be a move. And it may be a reaction is part of what's triggered it. But to me, I think there's a darker underbelly, which maybe the people involved are not that aware of themselves.
I've got a quote here, because I just happen to have this open. The Irish writer that wrote Father Ted. Graham Linehan.
Yes.
They says... There's a big article here that says what God means to me, and he says...
He's a major atheist.
This is how he sees God. Man in a beard, white hair, sits on a throne on a cloud, tells people whether they've been naughty or nice, doesn't like women. That's his definition of God.
I mean, and he's, he writes the IT crowd as well, which I love, I love his work, I love Father Ted, but, you know, again, although... He doesn't overtly use that within his stuff. He's more lightweight.
I think when people are on a stage doing stand-up, you are desperate for a laugh at any... You can't, if you're not careful, if you don't plan what you're doing, if you don't have an aim, you just need to get people to laugh at everything you say and then get off the stage having not said anything bad. And something like religion, because most of an audience... will either have not much of an opinion or not a very strong opinion, and any opinion they will probably be leaning towards not Christian. Yeah. It's an easy way of getting a couple of laughs in between the rest of your gags that you've written. It's an easy subject to get people to laugh at because it's not something that people have a lot of strong opinions on.
Yeah.
It's in a positive way,
but
so you can sort
of
play on
that. The key to a good stand-up comedian is to create the feel that you're an everyman and that what you feel is like a representation of what your audience is going to feel.
Well, that's the problem. And sometimes it's dishonest. Sometimes it's honest because it's what they feel, but sometimes it's just manipulating what you... Like I think, for instance, say Ben Elton in the 80s and 90s, it was thatch this, thatch that, and whether you like thatch or not, which I wasn't over keen on either myself, but... he was guaranteed to get a laugh out of that.
He
built that up out of,
that was all politics, wasn't it?
That
generation
then.
Was politics.
Well, the problem is we don't really care about politics, but we all have...
There's a lot on war, a lot of the big subjects of stand-up with war and
for, like,
politics.
Not for students don't really know, though, but something like God,
yeah,
something like faith.
G20-something.
Now I remember the one I was thinking about, Stuart Lee.
Yeah.
Is that the one?
Yeah.
No, he's very, very anti-God. Because he did the...
And you know
Jerry Springer.
Thank goodness he's not very funny. Have you seen his latest series?
I watched last week's one where he did God. And it actually wasn't that anti-Christian as much as I thought it would be.
Really? I find him so funny.
I just find him... I just don't... just don't find him very real.
I'm actually, yeah,
I don't find him real.
He's definitely an act. He's totally like postmodern.
Yes,
because he almost analyses his own performance while he's performing. I just find that quite bad.
Obviously, a lot of people do find him.
I mean, maybe you're too old.
I don't. Maybe
wrong generation.
Maybe. I mean, some of the other people. I mean, I love. I really like Ricky Gervais, and I really like Eddie Izzard. But again, the substance sometimes of what they're saying, I really just find
Ricky Gervais has got two things coming out. I mean, he is militant in every sense of the word, in that his next stand-up is about science, and essentially how science has done away with God and all that sort of stuff, and how all that sort of stuff. And then he's got a film in theory coming out with a guy called Louis C.K., who is a very, very funny man. But the film is all about evolution and how at one stage in evolution, when the gene to lie there's a whole film based on that. So all of his stuff now is definitely being funneled down into a particular,
subject
intent, matter. If that makes sense. Yeah. It's less sort of about, like, I mean, The Office and all that was all about funny, stupid people in stupid situations saying really stupid things, which I think is quite funny, as opposed to what his stand-up is becoming, which is a range of reasons why my opinions are right and everyone else's opinions are wrong, and why everyone should agree with me, which is what stand-up can become a lot of the time.
He's getting a bit serious, then.
Well, he's getting a bit up himself.
He's coming to lecture. He's got huge, and he's played upon it, sort of thing.
That's
whenever
right.
Whenever he's on stage, he'll just be like, I am the greatest man alive.
Yes, that is it. Yes. He's become absolute arrogance. Yeah. I mean, you know.
So you think he's gone over the... He's gone
I think,
past
he's,
that
he, I think he believes his own publicity now. And I think, you know, I think that's what does happen a lot of times with a lot of very successful people in any field. They get to the point where suddenly, oh, yes, I am great.
Like the,
all these people
the
really like
no
me.
Clothes, is it?
Yeah.
He doesn't realise he's naked. Everyone just sees he's naked.
Everything I say is obviously great.
Yeah.
And, you know, all my opinions, however vacuous they may be, are important. And people will laugh at them and agree with me because I'm me.
Yeah. I think it's getting back to the... I think a lot of people are doing it, getting back to the idea of people being funny and situations being funny. And I think, you know, there's lots of... There is an alternative way. You know, in stand-up, it's a bit more difficult because you're a person saying words. And so it's difficult because you have to find words and jokes that are funny without presenting any other thing. Whereas TV sitcoms are actually sort of calming down a bit more. Because there was a time it was all just like... sex, violent, and just like that was the source of the comedy. Whereas now, if you look at things like the IT Crowd and all that sort of stuff, it's just stupid characters, really, isn't it? It's just stupidity rather than gratuitous.
Is that a progression,
stuff.
You think?
I think it is, because,
in some
you know.
Ways, yeah.
So do you think the sitcoms sort of reflect the times? You know, like it was political in the 80s, then it went through the sexual and the pushing the barriers, maybe. Now it's all getting dumbed down.
Now it's not really getting dumbed down. It's just getting a bit cleverer.
It's getting a bit more abstract, I think, and a little bit more, you know, like things like the IT Crowd. I mean, I think I just love that series. Yeah. I think it's really funny.
Peter Kay's Phoenix Nights. That was a good. That was a clever series. Again, about characters.
So is there comedy for the credit crunch generation?
Oh yes, that's probably
Seen? Oh God, that was it's rubbish. I've forgotten his name. Oh, you know who's in it? The Christian comedian.
Yes, you're talking about Not Going Out.
Not Going Out.
See, now this is really
that's like,
great. I love that. It.
Really,
yeah. I love that.
It's just it's one-liners after another.
It is. That's what it is. It's
not really.
It's basically his writing.
Who's his
name?
There's Tim Vine.
Lee Mack.
Lee Mack's stand-up is amazing.
It is. Yeah.
Best stand-up I've ever seen, and I never.
What sort of stand-up does he do? Is it like lots
it
of one-liners?
It is one-liners, but it's again with the audience, plays in the audience.
Very good stuff with the audience.
Very lots of words.
I'd have never thought that I'd think of Lee Mack as a really good stand-up comedian, but I've got his DVD, and it's the best one I've seen, and I've got DVDs of, you know, all the big comedians. Right. And
who, you know the guy that played the dad in The Royal Family?
Oh, yes.
What's his name? He was on the One Show this week, and he was talking about how... there's now a resurgence in that just old-fashioned humour from the northwest, like.
Well, I saw
it. Not Going Out has a touch of that. Yeah, it has a touch of an old-fashioned style about it.
You talk about Bernard Manning.
No,
not that old-fashioned. But he's saying that now they're going on tours and they're selling out tours just with that simple sort of humour.
I think
people like that.
Back to the credit crunch thing, people need. to be relatable to themselves. Is to get out of their problems and have a good laugh, don't they?
Have a laugh at the problems.
Yeah.
I think it would become too much, and I think there are some people that sort of like, you can get addicted to entertainment, and you can. Yeah. You know, there was a preacher guy that once said, entertainment is the devil's substitute for joy, which, you know, is a very hardline approach, but it's true that a lot of people have their joy and their sort of actual life taken away because they do their rubbish job and then they switch on something to cheer them up. And they go and do their rubbish job, they switch on something to cheer them up. And so the only sort of happiness they get is watching some other situation created by some media guru on a box, and then they go back to their life. Yeah. And there's no actual change in their life, or there's no real happiness. It is 2D, you know, 2-dimensional happiness. Does that make sense? That was something that was mildly amusing.
A real change, just going sort of biblical. There used to be a sense in the Hebraic culture that used to live to work. In other words, work had sort of worth in itself, and people, you know, enjoyed their work and realised that there's a lot of value in, you know, working the soil and whatever. But now, our society now is the other way around, is working to live. In other words, get the work out of the way and live the weekend.
Yeah.
So your life is all about what you do over the weekend, your entertainment. So entertainment has become the only thing that's worth
source of life.
And, you know,
like, I think that's partly because of the sort of work we do now. Because if you think of it back then, it must have been, I'd like to
work
have...
in the fields.
There's part of it that I would quite like to actually have the ability and have strength. Like, if from like the age of 10 I'd been working in a field, and now I was like 20, I'd be all ripped. I'd be out there for hours smashing rocks, all that, with horses, with nature, and, you know. It'd be awesome, but we train ourselves for office jobs and laptops.
No use to anybody, really.
And so, but what happens is, like, your job is sort of, you don't really, you're just practical. Sort of doing it. It's not practical.
Everything you do depends on electricity. If there's no electricity,
exactly.
We're all buggered, aren't we?
Let's face it, if, like, everyone in the UK were pitching a fight against everyone in Bolivia or something. They would smash it, wouldn't they?
It's like having a job that would actually be of any worth on a desert island. You know what I mean?
Yeah. None of us have any... I don't have any skills in any way that would ever protect
me
from anything.
You'd entertain them with your jokes.
Yeah, and that would be of absolutely no use after about 3 minutes.
You watch some of the Bear Grylls.
Like, yeah.
You'd be all right.
But no, I think we'd get bored of work because our work's very little and... Yeah, meaningless in a bit, and so we need
no intrinsic value in itself.
Well, there's a friend of mine. It was one of my old housemates. Yeah. She did a degree. She did a master's, all in like psychology or something. She's now working at a call centre, like 5 days a week. This is after spending, you know, probably a good 20-25 grand in education. She's now working on a call centre. She doesn't care because she earns enough money to go and spend it on the weekend and go out and get absolutely ridiculously.
Well, that's it. They can put up
they can put up with it because they know that on the weekend
they know what's coming in of it, and it's like it's a trough and a
It should be. And so within that whole entertainment, devil's subject for joy, all that sort of thing. Within that framework, there's no. You know, you're happy enough.
No continuity.
There's just sort of, this will do until,
that,
you know.
That can't be what we were created for.
I think it's just, I think people just get bored very easily.
And if you go to places where there's not all this stimulus, the pleasures are simple, like in Brazil, you know, prostitution.
But if you do go to some places like Africa, you know, they'll be really happy with like a family sitting around a fire singing a song. Do you know what I mean? But like that would be over here. That would be, imagine if we, for entertainment, all just sat around and sang some songs.
Rejoicing with your family.
But it used to be like that. For, you know,
in England,
family in the Victorian times had a piano.
Yeah.
And in the evening, that's what they sang hymns, didn't they?
Well, the other thing is, like, we don't really sort of have entertainment. Family entertainment is a word for makes the parents laugh, and their small little children are heavily entertained with it. But there's nothing really that brings adult teenage children.
Britain's Got Talent.
Funny, it is more edutainment, isn't it?
Edutainment.
But like, there's nothing. Yeah. Families don't really do anything together. Do you know what I mean? They'll sometimes put up with each other's favourite TV programmes that the other ones won't like.
Yeah.
And there's not, do you know what I mean? There's people don't really go out and do anything.
I know.
Family yacht trip.
Because families are are not together as much as they used to be.
I think that's partly because, you know, we've allowed, you know, kids go off and do the, there's kids entertainment and kids things for kids. Yeah. There's adult, you know, things on TV, not like that sort of thing. There's things that adults can watch on TV, blah, blah, blah. There's youth stuff. And so you just have all these different pockets, you know, I mean, and they never come together for anything.
The 50s, there weren't such things as youth.
No.
Teenagers were invented, weren't they? Where's the 50s, yeah. It's a marketing trick, wasn't it?
It's a consumer creation. Yeah. It's like a teenager.
And, you know, it's not...
The Pepsi's, John Hughes, Pepsi generation.
And the other thing is, like, it's not... A, you know, it's not... A, before that, you were either a child or a man. Yeah. And in a way, that would probably make life a lot better, because we have a lot of sort of 35, 40... You know, we have a lot of adults that still, in every way, behave like children. But have all the responsibility.
I'm joking.
No, dad's responsible. Dad's but like
everything is his fault.
But like you do see 35-year-olds, you know, with family, kids, that sort of stuff, and they come home and instead of like spending time with the family, they sit there and play Xbox for 4 hours. It's like
they live
that wouldn't
in like,
happen.
It's a perpetual state of arrested development.
It is. And like, but if
people. Well, I don't do that because I don't know how to work the Xbox.
You would if you could.
Yeah.
But it's because the teenage thing has spread. What teenage used to be 13 to 19.
But now
it's now 13 to 43.
Exactly.
And what used to be a solely teenage thing, like pop music and computer games and all that, is now shared by a wider age group. And it dumbs down the whole sort of adulthood as well.
The problem is, like, people don't, as it were, put away childish things. I don't really sort of go, right, okay, that was fun when I was 12. Yeah. I'm now 24. Maybe I should think of finding some more meaningful things to do.
Pick my age.
Sorry. I'm sure you do lots of meaningful things. But no, it's like, and I think that's just like one of the problems we get into is that people are. Kids have parents that just play computer games all the time and they go and sit and watch Cartoon Network all the time, and the teenagers sit on MySpace and MSN all the time. So they never speak to each other. Then they go to sleep, wake up the next day, go to school, college, work.
Well,
and
all the
kids
should all get on MSN.
Yeah.
They communicate with each other then.
But could you like imagine what it would be like if everyone actually did think for themselves? It would be chaos. So actually... The status quo is important.
It's to keep it down. It's the opium of the masses. Entertainment is the opium of the masses.
Well, no, I think there are some people that think. There are some people that think for themselves all the time and are natural born leaders. And there are those that can work and do a good job and need direction. I don't think there's any problem with that. I don't think everyone, you know, if there was no TV, everyone would start thinking for themselves and suddenly everything would kick off and there'd be fights and riots. Because I think it's, you know.
Someone would start.
But who do you think was at the centre of these G20 students who don't have TV? Okay. They don't have TV, so they riot.
Yeah, but wait, what happened that night in New York when all the lights went out?
Everyone
I think probably the population
went out and rioted.
Really?
There was a lot of looting, but there was also a lot of like community coming together as well.
Depending on what you
that was years ago.
Whether you were
civilised. Yes, yeah, that too. I'm sure there's that happening. And plus, whatever your inclination was, if people can't see you doing it, you did it. So if you went out looted and people couldn't see it because it was all dark, then you'd do it. Mm. Or if you're more sociable, you went out and had street parties.
Yeah,
so what you're saying is that
there is
our civilization is very close to being barbarity, you know, and it's only electricity that's keeping us.
So that's where you should go for.
I just wonder, in the 50s or before that, when electricity was first reduced, whether if we were to could go back and warn everyone of how it would actually be in 50, 60 years' time.
Well, each generation has its debauchery and its depravity. Victorian era, an early Victorian, people were sort of like getting rid of their babies and throwing them in the Thames and it was just... So each generation is just the human... Human debauchery just changes its style.
So it's human heart that's the problem.
It is indeed.
And we just excise it in different ways depending on our generation. That's true. I mean, just looking at things like the Holocaust or whatever, the Holocaust could have happened 1,000 years ago if they had technology. The hate was still there.
Well, if you look at it, it's that thing like Apostle Paul, you know, his job was to wipe out, though it wasn't to wipe out people, to wipe out the Christians. But, you know, if he'd had the technology, he'd have probably been candidate for an early Hitler. Yeah. But, you know, the intent was there. But obviously he found Jesus and converted and became a great sort of apostle. Yeah. But it is that thing that, you know, people are not necessarily always that fantastic. Quite the opposite. They're quite... And it, as you said, it just takes different forms, you know. Yeah. You had... There were, you know, the 50s, there were bad things. 60s, there were bad things. 70s, there were bad things.
So I think it's getting worse then, do you think?
I just think it's changing. I think it's getting more covert because we've got, I think we've got better policing to an extent. Mm. So how we do, how people do what they want to do, is just becoming a bit more undercover.
Plus,
more.
You find out.
Oh yeah, some things improve and some things get worse. Basically, it's you know,
and some crimes aren't seen as bad as they used to be. I mean, look at the Holocaust with Hitler. You can now buy Hitler's paintings.
Can you?
Yeah, it's amazing. In the newspapers. Yeah. You can actually buy his painting.
But if you look a plumber from Redditch or something bought one.
Yeah. If you look at... Interesting. Something like that. Interestingly, you were talking about, at the same point, if you think about the Victorians throwing the babies out into the lakes, that sounds horrible. Nowadays, we have legalised abortion.
That's right.
Which is surely only... Which is a similar... Yeah. You know, obviously... It's still the basic idea of I don't want a child, therefore I will get rid of it. Maybe it's a different...
And also in America, since they're legalising stem cell research, you now get a lot of stories now about stem cells can now cure blindness or MS and things like which makes it acceptable because of, you know, the ends justifying the means. But the fact is, you're still killing fetuses.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, no, stem cells.
Well, they don't have to. You get it from the umbilical cord.
I know, but they could do, but they don't.
Yeah.
I mean, but still, it's still at the moment, the way they're doing it, it's still through...
That's been one of Obama's big things, isn't
it? Yeah, it's the first thing he did, isn't it? You know, if you got in early, perhaps Superman would still be with us. Christopher Reeve.
Oh, right. Yeah. I get
That's
it.
That's a deep one, isn't it? Right, okay, so another subject. So we've covered the whole of culture, popular culture.
My ex-girlfriend thought that Christopher Reeve's built St. Paul's Cathedral.
So I say that again?
My ex-girlfriend thought that it was Christopher Reeves that built St. Paul's Cathedral.
She was a good one. Well done. Well picked. You went for an intelligent one.
I went out with Jane Goody.
Too soon.
Someone, they're making a film of her.
They're making a musical about
her. Oh, a musical?
They're making both. A film starring Meg Ryan. Now,
really?
Meg Ryan is Jane Goody.
Yeah, now... I'm not going to pass any comment because I think the sentence itself is a comment in itself. But the other thing they're going to do is they might be making a musical in the style of Britain's Got Talent, in that to get the part of Jay Goody, you have to audition on reality TV play Jay Goody.
With Simon Cowell there.
No, Max Clifford said he would be happy to be a judge if it happened.
Oh, what a sacrifice for him, isn't it?
I think it has gone a bit crazy, though. Because she's become a bit of a figurehead.
Entertainment, I think, is the headline for all this.
She's become a figurehead, but she's, do you know what I mean? She's
become like a Doctor Who episode from the '50s. Yeah. It's like they go forward in time and we're all stuck in a weird dystopian future where we're, our whole entertainment's based around people auditioning for a part of a dead person who was
found. All the ones who don't make it are destroyed.
I do think that if they did bring in some kind of punishment element to X Factor, it would make things a lot simpler. Like if you do badly, you get slapped or something. I think
Bond films, Paul Lever.
Every time the judge presses the big X, you get an electric shock.
The queues would be a lot smaller, and the entertainment actually probably wouldn't be quite as good because it's watching the people that do bad. That's the sad thing is that. We're sort of entertained when someone like that Suzanne Boyle who does it, but we're more entertained when someone really bad.
I must say, I laughed my head off the other night. You see the one that was female impersonator.
Oh yeah,
came on and sang.
His voice. Oh, what a voice.
Is it bad?
The thing is, they think they can sing.
I know.
It's weird.
Trouble is, you realise you're actually laughing at someone who's actually slightly disturbed. Yeah. And you think, what am I doing here?
But I think that sort of thing has opened up a platform for anyone to try and be successful and be a celebrity. And by making that possible, people are even more unhappy with their rubbish jobs. They read in the paper, I used to be a plumber, now I'm a £10 million rock star touring the world. You can be it too. And it's like...
I'd love to be a plumber.
It's the same odds as winning the lottery.
I used to be a rock star, now I'm a plumber earning £10 million a week.
Is that a quote from yourself?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Because some of you used to be rock stars around this table, yeah. Ending up in a council flat in Stratford.
Oh, LA those, to Stratford. Those were the days, yeah. Oh, very well.
But I think, but it's made out to be like, it's made out to be if you don't have this, your life is not as good as it could have been and you've wasted it to an extent. And it's like, you know, some people are born to be plumbers because, and office workers, yeah. And secretaries and parents as well. Yeah. Being a parent has become like the thing you do if you're not good at work, which is such a lie. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, not many people aspire to be mothers. Do you know what I mean? Or to look after their default, children. That's sort of like, oh, well, you know, I'll do that for a year and then I'll go back and work.
Yeah. It's a punishment for not being careful.
Yeah, it's really bad because, like, being a parent is the most important job. If you can't do that job properly, don't care how good you are at the other jobs.
Tell us about it.
That's the weirdest noise I've ever heard.
Tell us about two pairs of thumbs here.
Tell me about it.
Well, there was a program called The Hospital, which was on, and there was all about teenage pregnancy, and this young girl got pregnant, and the only reason she was happy is because she was going to have this child, and it was just another thing to love, and that would automatically love her back, just because it was her
existing,
her mum.
I think a lot of people get pets.
That was the reason.
A lot of people get pets for the same reason. I know a friend of mine that had some. I had a few issues. Yeah. She bought a hamster, and this hamster was like God. She was like, she typed out little instructions and laminated them. So when she went, she had all these instructions written out. She phoned up every day to check the hamster was okay.
Well, the hamster could speak.
No. But like, and you just sort of sit there and just go, oh, right, there's something, you know, there's having a pet. And then there's loving a pet, and then there's
dressing up
But like in America, all the people that have those little dogs and like dress them up, you just sort of think, oh,
is it pot-bellied pigs, isn't it, or something?
Yeah,
wasn't that?
Are they still doing that sort of thing?
Oh, I think so. Yeah.
What, dressing up pigs?
No, pets, like celebrity pets, used to be little pot-bellied pigs. Pet pigs,
really? Yeah. I think nowadays it's more like little dogs, isn't it?
Yeah,
little yappy dogs.
Yeah.
See that documentary about the two Australian guys that bought that lion from Harrods?
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
And what happened?
And
yeah, I saw that.
Well, the lion grew up with these two guys, I think they're living in West London, and it got so big that they had to put it, give it back to the wild. I think they went to Africa to release it. And then after like a year or two, they went back, not thinking that the lion would recognise them at all. And it's a very famous clip on YouTube. It's got millions of hits now. And it's the lion that makes its way down the rocks, stands still, like, recognises them for a few seconds, then suddenly just starts to gallop. And you think, what's going to happen? Because he's got these two guys, they haven't met in a couple of years, and this lion is raging towards them. And you can actually see the lion embracing. It's as if the lion's like wrapping his arms around these two guys. Yeah. And it's like...
It's quite amazing.
Actually, it's got a lot of hits on YouTube.
Why did they stand still? I'm sorry, but no matter how good a friend...
They'd remember. But you never know. Until you just see this lion like racing towards them. You never know what's going to happen until that... last second where you just see them.
That's the one interesting thing about YouTube is that you know how like people mention, oh, my friend did blah blah blah, and oh, did you hear about the thing that happened? And now you can actually watch these things, you know, anything, you know, all those little funny little incidents that happen in your home or that are really quite funny, the whole world can see. Like that little kid that bit his little brother's finger.
Cuts in parody as well, and even the parody gets millions of hits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's another very funny one of a kid that went to the dentist, and the dentist obviously gave him a lot of drugs, you know, to sort of whack him out, and he's sitting in the back of the car.
It's just
completely out of it. And it's just...
No, he's like the irresponsible parents that film it and put it on YouTube.
Yeah. You thought about that, man.
And title it, Drugged Up Kid.
Yeah.
But so like, it used to be you've been framed and you got 200 quid for it.
Yeah,
now they put it on YouTube and you get billions of people looking at it.
The thing is, if you put it on YouTube, you lose all rights to own it. Well, it's like they now own it and they can distribute it.
As they want.
So better go for You've Been Framed to get to.
But a lot of people have got fame out of YouTube, which is really like there's a kid called sang a song called Chocolate Rain, which is apparently about racism. but I don't know.
Institutionalised racism, apparently.
Apparently.
But I'm very weird lyrics. Very lyrics. He just has a really deep voice.
Very, very flimsy.
Chocolate Rain Man across the street the other day. Yeah.
But like, he got offered a deal with Cherry Coke or whatever, and you know, was on TV and did loads of big stuff. And what's her name? The woman from Britain's Got Talent. She was on Jay Leno's show last week or something.
Yeah, she was on it.
Or someone.
He impersonated her.
No, no, she was interviewed by one of them.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay.
She got through the first round of a thing. And
I know,
she's on...
and somehow she's on. But it's for such a short time. That's what I feel really sad about. Like, you look at all these, like, take S Club Juniors. Do you remember them?
Oh, I love them.
Imagine having. Crazy. One of them is now in the Saturdays. But the rest of them, two of them, them. Oh, okay. Yeah. But imagine being one of the other five and having your music career over by the age of about 17. Imagine at 17 knowing you've failed at something already.
You were in a group once, weren't you?
Yeah, yeah, but we at least didn't. At least you didn't reach the heights of S Club Juniors and then get it.
In your own way, you did, don't
we? No, we just did a few rubbish gigs around various places in the UK. But like, to actually reach somewhere quite good, like all these people, and then have it taken away, must be so.
Is that what they used to say about Orson Welles, and he lived his life in reverse, and he started off with Citizen Kane, and the best film ever, and ended up sort of selling dog food on the television or something, you know.
Well, that was part of the fact that who Citizen Kane was about, wasn't it? It was about the, what's his name?
Mogul,
yeah, the big, was not Hearst, was it Hearst?
Yeah, Hearst. William Randolph.
Randolph Hearst. Yeah. And he went out of his way to destroy the rest of his career, didn't he?
Oh, is that why he went backwards?
Yeah. Well, they didn't really go backwards because he made lots of other good stuff after that.
Yeah, but then he did the War of the Worlds thing on the radio.
That was
the
earlier,
hoax.
Wasn't that, was
yeah, I was saying, we did all that at the beginning when he was young.
Didn't so, War of the Worlds he was a horrible brilliant. Ending. Terrible.
I haven't seen it.
But terribly that, done.
Didn't that when they first did it on radio, people thought it was real at first?
Yeah, well, that's him. That was Orson Welles. He did it as if it was really happening.
Oh, legend.
There was also I like the sound of an incident in South America where, years later, another guy at one of the radio stations, I can't remember which country.
Bolivia.
Say Bolivia.
But he actually put it on the radio as well in the same style as Orson Welles. And the actual building that the radio station was housed in, once the local community got wind of it was actually a practical joke, it actually burnt the building down. People got killed.
What?
He was, like, his family have, like, since then been harassed, like, for I don't know how many years we're going back, but it really went so badly. And
because
the
of
reaction,
a practical joke.
Yeah, because people were so annoyed that they'd been, like,
misled. It's weird.
Misled.
Media, what the media comes out with is now being so, like, there was I don't know what happened, but I'm sure some of you know, of the Frank Lampard thing that's happened on radio.
Oh, right.
That was on LBC, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that was the morning
interview about his girlfriend living in a little flat or something.
Yeah,
and
with his two daughters, yeah.
He phoned up because the DJ said that he was, like, neglecting his kids and he was living it large, you know. Yeah. His kids were living in poverty, relative poverty. You know,
in West
like
London,
us, like
in
us.
Fulham.
Yeah. And he phoned up and said, no, you know, I get up in the middle of the night, I look after them and they're moving now to a house even better than the house I've got, you know, like 20 million. My house is only worth 10 million. Well, maybe not quite those figures, but
it's you know, but that's the thing, like the radio, like there used to be you can keep now. People are locking down on it though. Yeah. That's the thing, though. People are locking down on it, and we've got to be careful what we say.
No one listens.
I suppose the joy of the internet is that they still haven't policed that quite
not in this country, though.
Get away with anything.
They have in the Middle East and China and places like that.
Really?
China
doesn't get through.
Things don't get through.
Giant firewall.
Yeah. Even the internet is. There's certain websites that you can't access in China. Yeah.
Right.
Well, North Korea, you can't access Facebook or something. Crazy.
There's some countries where because at the end of the day, I mean, it's cables coming into the country. I mean, the government can control those cables and stop the internet totally.
Right.
Somehow. Don't ask me how.
It's all wireless now, isn't it? Wi-Fi hotspot situation.
Deal with that, King.
You can't control the air.
Now they're erecting lead walls outside all the houses in Korea now.
Suffocating.
I've been asked to join the BNP.
someone, Nazi party.
Yeah, someone's put me on a list, and I've got an email from Nick Griffin. But somehow he's figured out the Christian background. Well, he's going for Christians.
Oh yeah, well he's lost the power. He's lost the power of the of the Union Jack now.
Yeah.
Right, it's been claimed back. The Union flag. Right. Oh, right, the Union flag. It's been claimed back now. It doesn't have the power that it had with them anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's trying to align himself with Christianity as being the
anti-Islam thing. Jesus saying, he's got a big poster here, apparently. Yeah. It's for the European elections, June the 4th. Vote BNP. Big poster with a picture of Jesus, like the idealised looking picture. John 15:20, quoting from Scripture. If they have persecuted me, they will also persecute you. What would Jesus do?
Which is what Jesus said specifically, well, obviously to us as well, but to the apostles, most of whom died quite horrifically and were in prison, etc., etc., etc. It was in no way meant to be applied to government organisations.
Let's be straightforward.
Reply back to it saying that you're a disabled black Jewish immigrant and just see what. They probably will be moved off the list.
Or just one of those. Yeah, that's right. But in the post, they're saying, will the Church of England banned us? The press persecute us and the police intimidate us. The BNP persecuting.
Britain loves an underdog.
Well, the thing is, it persecuted for saying what you think. Well, they might say that, but I bet you a lot of people do think.
Stinks.
Yeah, but no, but I would suggest there's a lot of people do think in a certain way.
Oh, right.
Yeah, let's not beat around the bush. Racism.
when they see a lot of you know, the illegal immigrants coming over and blah, blah, blah.
I have a theory about that. Know.
Yeah, go on then.
Say, like, areas like Barking, where you get the sort of radical white movement of going, it's not the way it used to be. It used to be all friendly. Everyone used to meet up, share apple pies and just dance around singing with flags. The reason why, when immigrants move in, and doesn't feel as friendly, and some reason, now we've lost all this community spirit because no one's white anymore. It's because when they moved in, they sort of didn't want to go over and talk to them because they were a different colour, creating this unfriendly atmosphere. Yeah. That if they were a bit more open and less racist, it would have been a lot more, you know, friendly and much better areas. Because if you started bad, I mean, if people have, like, put into a box already to be unfriendly and, like, you know, xenophobic.
Yeah.
I knew it, but I was in the womb.
I mean, my parents, before the war, they fought Moseley in his black shirts in the East End.
My grandparents.
You would have done too, yeah. And so these are just the new people taking over. They're actually going for a big image change at the moment. They're telling their members not to, if they've got skinheads, then wear a hat.
Hide the skinheads, yeah.
They hide it, and he's trying to go for this sort of new image.
Yeah.
But underneath that image is the same old.
Yeah. But the thing is that it's because the other parties are so weak or corrupt, you know, Labour and Conservatives. I mean,
I'd love to see a BNP advert where they have, like, all these young male models or something in it wearing Converse going, we've got BNP.
Can someone describe what Johnny just did?
He moved his head in
hair.
Hair.
I got it.
Nancy I'm so glad we can talk like this.
The whole BNP thing is based on people having pride, people feeling they should have a better life than they do have, and blaming anyone else that's not them for the reasons why they have failed in their life.
And what they do, they go back to the spirit, the Blitz spirit, where, of course, most people were English in those days, because it was before immigration, and sort of saying, well, we're still the same people as they were then. Therefore, you know, we are the only true English people, you know. Because, it did bring people together, the Second World War, and we've had nothing since then.
Climate change, they're trying to make that into the new World War.
There are things that bring people together. Yeah. You know, I mean, as I said, faith, I remember going to a picnic with you lot, and Dad pointing out there were Jews, Germans, Palestinians, and all other kind of creed and colour.
I remember how long time ago.
Oh, was that when Noah got lost?
No.
He used to run.
This is in Brentwood.
Brentwood, thing. Yeah.
Johnny wasn't born yet. He was still...
And you know something? While we were there, and we were all sort of youngest Christians,
And that was totally unconscious, yeah, that.
Yeah, but there was someone speaking there.
Right.
They had speakers, you know, sort of proper
speakers. Right, yeah, yeah.
Chris Hill was one of the speakers.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was the first time I saw him. Talking about Israel.
Right.
Yeah. But I think that's what's interesting. It's like all this, we have this idea that our people can't be unified. We're all too different. So we need to separate ourselves. And that's not how it's supposed to be.
What was unified all those people was Christianity.
Is that
it? It was faith.
Yeah. And I think just people...
Or an alien invasion. Yeah. Or climate change.
Yeah, yeah. Climate change. That's a big... you're absolutely right.
A common enemy. You know, vote Green
absolutely.
Party.
Yeah.
Climate change.
Yeah, but people don't take that seriously now.
They do.
They're trying to make people. They're trying to make it a global. Because it's global. Isn't it?
Yeah, but now that the Al Gore thing has been discredited, though.
Yeah, it has.
You can't have a hate crime against the environment.
No, not at all.
But just because you discredit thing, if it looks quite good, most people ignore the discreditors. Mm.
Yeah. So, of Nazis, but still lots of Holocaust deniers.
Yeah.
You know, it's
prominent.
Once something's put into a society, you don't get everybody dropping it.
No. Not that Holocaust deniers are right, obviously.
Sorry, Ron. It's,
I saw loads of Iranian food places. I didn't know. This is what I was thinking. I was thinking every country in the world now has some kind of food outlet in the UK, which is brilliant. Yeah. Yeah. But nowhere in the world has an English food outlet.
Yeah, that's what I was
thinking. Well, they do. I mean, I remember when I first went to America.
What on earth is in it?
Roy Rogers, the well-known Roy Rogers, had a chain of...
Cowboy,
he was a cowboy, yeah. TV cowboy personality. Very big in
it. Trigger, isn't it?
Yeah, Roy Rogers and Trigger, his horse. Yeah, that's his horse. But he had a chain of English fish and chip shops.
Oh right, that's the only thing.
But he had printed sort of like fake English newspapers to have your fish and chips in.
Yeah. Mind you, in India, there's curry houses everywhere. That's an English, isn't that? An English
yeah, very true. Yeah.
Chicken tikka. I mean, that's
well, tikka masalas and brown.
Masala was the
and balti is another.
Curry was our national dish. Yeah. Can't remember who it was.
How a shame! Our national dish is. See, there we go. We're complaining, you know, people like the BNP. I'm not us, obviously. I'm complaining about immigration.
They go out for curry.
I bet they all go out for a curry.
They meet around the curry.
Make beer that's probably Spanish, like San Miguel and stuff. Mm. And then they go out and try and beat people up. We have to edit that bit out, aren't we?
Then they go out and buy them all ice cream.
Italian ice cream.
Italian ice cream.
Well, there was a famous BNP speech made in Lincoln, where I come from, saying, saying Lincoln has always been British. We have always been British. Lincoln was built by the Romans.
The British Romans.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Romans came over and they fought the ancient Britons.
Exactly.
They fought them.
Yeah. Less than. Yes.
Never mind.
Don't vote BNP. Probably can't say that.
Yeah. But
mention the other thing which you've mentioned in one of your books a long time ago, and I've often thought of the whole thing about this trinity of the BNP, Islamists, and Social Workers Party, SWP.
All
of them that's seemingly very different, but they all have one thing in common. Yeah. Is that basically at their heart they're anti-Semitic and anti-Israel. Yeah.
Like a lot of the church as well.
And a lot of the church too, yes.
And
high academic, not the true church. I know that, you know, obviously the radio place I work for is based in a university, and I have not met a single university lecturer that in any way supports Israel. I mean, Lincoln has a history of anti-Semitism, and I mean, just on Friday there was
Hugh
a protest.
Hugh of Lincoln, the little boy who was discovered with his throat cut. And they blamed it on the Jews.
Only on Friday there was a boycott against Israel in Lincoln, saying don't buy Israeli products, don't blah, 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 blah.
Any demonstration you go to, whatever, whether it's Free Tibet or Sri Lanka or whatever, it'll always be Palestinian.
Yeah,
blah,
all
blah,
these,
blah.
They're just like the Nazis. Yeah. They love this, Israel total false irony.
Yeah.
You know, a completely false irony that somehow they're acting just as bad as the fascists or whatever.
Lies.
Lies.
Can you be clearer than that?
Well, I would like to add that I think it's a load of lies.
No, right.
Lies, which were a foreign invention.
Yes, it was the foreigners. No, it's
lies, damn lies.
Yes, and
holding up mirrors to raise some.
Good. Yeah. So anyway. Talking of lunch.
Mirrors.
I'm glad you brought that up. I've started developing a complex about my weight. I proper started freaking out about it. Mm. It's got really bad because I realised I've got a bit of a belly, and I've always been underweight, and now I'm not underweight, and I'm getting. Noah's been teaching me exercises, and I thought I was going to have a heart attack at one point. I thought, I don't care.
You're not
rather
built
die
for
skinnier.
I'm not built for exercise.
I've got a heart problem, so I shouldn't exercise. I'm like, no, I just want to be skinny. And I was on a train, and I saw someone reading a magazine, and there was like some like man with all his abs out. I was like, I must look like that.
Let's have a Saffron Planet
workout.
Sponsored diet. There's at least three of us here that, or even four.
I mean, there was a time when I had a six pack.
Really?
Yeah, but now I've got a full barrel. It's developed. See, it's
but I think men are just as body conscious as women nowadays.
Definitely.
Because it's all like, this is my theory: TV, magazines, not radio. They all filter out the top 20% looking people. Now, if you go home and, you know, if you go home and have a TV and you watch TV, or if you whatever, all you're pumping into your eyes are pretty much the top 20% looking people on the planet. You then go out into the 5%. World and find you don't really find many people looking like that, and that you yourself don't look like that, and then spend far too much time and effort on very, very little. To have abs, which I don't have.
I've got this picture of me walking down the street sometimes, and I've got this.
Oh, you're walking? Oh, that was a long time ago.
Yeah. I vaguely remember it. But there's my thoughts of what I look like are quite a lot thinner than I actually am. And then as I walk past a mirror and see how well I see, the thought bubble at the top, I end up like 16 tons. I'll draw it down one day to illustrate.
I wonder what the world would be like if there was no mirrors or shined like surfaces.
Yeah. Like, a lot of ugly people.
A lot of hairy people.
A lot of unkempt.
Where are they now? Everyone will have spinach in their teeth.
Yes,
spinach. Yeah. It'd be unbearable.
They go, oh, you got spinach? Yeah, but how do you know you haven't got more spinach?
I can barely hear you through the spinach. Spinach.
Well, talking of spinach, did somebody say lunch?
Yeah, spinach.
Let's get lunch.
On the topic of lunch, all right.
And sing.
Saffron. Saffron Planet, making sense of it all.